I don't know, like ignorance, not to like be accusatory, but like folks don't speak Japanese or haven't aren't familiar with the real estate landscape or the cultural landscape or whatever, kind of just hear this nebulous term of like Akiya and Studio Ghibli and like Gate or whatever, and just like dream about it a bunch,
Well,
a lot.
international media kind of is at least partly, if not mainly, to blame. Like I, even myself, when I started dealing with them, which is about 10 years ago, and we don't do anything near the amount that you do, but I walked into this million-dollar mansion above the Philosopher's Stone in central Kyoto, and the agent is like, "So this became an Akiya about 8 months ago." This is an Akiya, really?
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options.
All right, so for today's episode, this one's another JREP, Japan Real Estate Experts panel session that we recorded with the entire panel minus Blanca, who sadly couldn't make it that day. And in it, we hear from Tracy a bit about the history of Minpaku, private lodging or vacation rentals as they're known elsewhere. We hear what the term Akiya actually means and how it's used from Matt. And we receive an interest rates update from Emil. We also discuss the theoretical potential restrictions that have been in the media potentially to be levied on non-resident property purchases, and Japan's post-World War II history, how that might affect the Diet's ability to impose those. We debunk the myth that some people still have in regards to how buying property here could potentially help with residency, a few other myths while we're out there debunking, and the so-called new requirement to disclose and record non-resident buyer nationalities and residencies. Spoiler alert, it isn't exactly new. And finally, we end with a bit of a men's World Cup banter, although considering that one's already ended as of the publishing of this episode, that part might seem a bit outdated to you, but what the hell, I left it in there. So, pretty informative mix of current and historical information for you there. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side. All right, so the Japan Real Estate Experts panel back in session again. We're actually increasing by the numbers from week to week. We have another member now, but I just realized in the last episode and maybe the couple before that too, we haven't done self-intros in a while. We might have new people joining who have no bloody idea who we are. So do you want to start? I got Matt over here, Emil here, and Tracy down there.
On my screen, I'm stacking like four of us like this.
Okay.
One, two, three, four.
Okay, we don't know where we are.
Okay.
Emil.
Okay. All right. I am Emil. I am a real estate agent here in Tokyo. I help foreign families buy a home in Tokyo. Tracy, over to you.
Well, yes. I do a couple of things. I specifically for this podcast, I'm involved in short-term rentals, so Minpaku. So I run a property management. I'm a licensed property manager.
Talk about everything. I'm going to talk about what I do as well. I get some nice, exciting news.
Oh, good. So I'm a licensed property manager for short-term rentals, which is different from regular real estate property management. So anything that's furnished is my kind of wheelhouse. And I do short stays. So I've got ryokan licenses for some of my properties or minpaku licenses. And I also do some serviced apartments for corporate stays. I also work with people who are coming, like who have properties and live abroad perhaps and need someone to manage and optimize their properties while they're here, while they're away, sorry. They get to use their own properties when they're in town, but when they're away, they let me look after it and make some money for everybody. So we love us some money. The other thing I do is I help people understand the Japanese market for short-term rentals because whatever you think about, like in, like let's say the Airbnb world abroad, throw it all out the window before you land in Japan. It's very, very different here. It's you're not buying, you can't just buy something and chuck it up on Airbnb and call it a day. No. And I can talk a bit more about how that works here. And in another hat that I wear is that I'm an engineer for
Nice.
applications for language learning. So I've been that's why I came to Japan initially. So I've got like 30 dictionary apps on the App Store and Android Store, and that's kind of passive these days. It lets us play in real estate, which is something I love to do as well. So
And you
that's my
mentioned
story.
for people who aren't familiar with the terms, you mentioned Minpaku and Yokan.
Yes. So minpaku is a, well, I can give you the kanji definition of that, like where the word has come from. It's a new word that came in to the lexicon as a dictionary maker, I'll tell you. Because there was no law and there was no, because all this home rentals is a kind of a new idea globally in a way, so they had to sort of make up a new word. And so minpaku is the catch-all word for renting a property, renting a house or renting a unit that's not a hotel. And I guess in other places it's called vacation rentals. In other places it's called, people use the generic Airbnb term. I have an Airbnb, I am an Airbnb host, which is the hill I'm going to die on. I'm trying to get that out of the zeitgeist, if you know. But ryokan is the Japanese word for inn. And there is simple inns, which are hotels. So that's for anything that is available for rent 365 days a year. And you can do that for a single room. But there is also a category of ryokan, which is your standard front desk, 24-hour hotel style. So in Japan, there's everything in between. So and then there's Western hotels as well. But I'm normally in that, vacation rental space for simple lodging. It's the translation of.
Thank you.
Does
Yeah,
that
no,
give the
that
basic?
was
But if you need more information, I explain everything very clearly on my blog. So
Yeah, Tracy Northcott, see down there.
yeah.
All right, and Matt.
Fun side note, when I believe I first met Tracy, it turns out that she has worked with an academic called Jim Bream,
Yes, I do know.
right? Who, when I was like a younger man and beginning my studies of Japanese, like Jim Bream was like the person to go to. And when Tracy first mentioned Jim, I was like, oh, no way. Like, what?
Yeah,
Seriously?
we edited half of his dictionary. So like
That's so cool.
my brother is
That's
a
actually
complete
so
language
cool.
nerd and helped like did a lot of collaborations with Jim back in the day
Oh,
and
that's
like
awesome. I
you
gotta
know.
say, now that Matt visited us, I'm so impressed with his Japanese. I always pictured him as a 100% English speaker guy who just knows some Akiya
Totally.
terms in Japanese, but he is bloody fluent.
More than me. I'm
It's funny, especially having like, so hi, I'm Matt. I speak Japanese. I have a lot, especially Japanese, but like if I'm at an event or a bar or whatever, and they'll just start speaking English. I'm like, oh, okay, great, you're speaking English. So then we speak English. for like an hour or however long, days even, like multiple times. And then suddenly we'll be in a Japanese situation and I'll just be like, oh, okay, Japanese, let's do it. And everybody kind of does a double take of like, what's going on here? Like, you didn't tell me. Yeah, because we were speaking in English. So why would I?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm Matt. I do Akiya and rural real estate due diligence, portfolio curation, and planning, like strategy, really, I think is kind of a good phrase for it now. I work with licensed real estate agents. I don't pretend to be licensed myself. And yeah, I'm kind of the adventurer. Well, we're all adventurous in our own wonderful ways, but if you really want to get out into the weird, into the sticks, into the weeds, maybe, and kind of explore.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And explore more, kind of adventurous things, lifestyle more than financial investment side of things, then I'm your guy. And I run akiyas.com and, well, yeah, akiyas.com, A-K-I-Y-A. Am I spelling it right? A-K-I-Y-A-Z.
So far you were, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, don't second guess yourself, just commit. .com. And well, yeah, I think that's...
Do you think that the definition, if we're defining things, do you think that the definition of akiyas has expanded? I mean, there's the, again, what people imagine akiyas to be, and then the whole range of what's out there from, you know, like the trash to, you know, recently vacated. Where do you sit? Where do you feel?
Now, if you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out Akiya Mart. That's A-K-I-Y-A hyphen Mart, M-A-R-T, akiyamart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western-style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the Akiya Mart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, Z-I-V, at checkout and get 30% off your Akiya Mart Pro annual plan at akiyamart.com.
I've actually written about this.
On your blog.
Maybe you've read it. There's like a really big bifurcation of like linguistic bifurcation of what Akiya even is. The Anglosphere has kind of taken
and run
with like the arguments that I've had on Reddit about the definition of Akiya, and I always win them. Make no mistake.
Hey, dude, on Reddit, everybody knows everything. It's impossible.
Yeah, the Anglosphere has really kind of painted its own picture, very colorful picture of what Akiya can be. Some of the people think it's like Nagaya. Other people think that it's Machiya. And Kyoto, actually, Machiya is really just kind of a Kyoto area designation of an Akiya, or like an order. So it's not even really a designation. It's just a name. So there's all these like ignorance, not to like be accusatory, but like folks who don't speak Japanese or aren't familiar with the real estate landscape or the cultural landscape or whatever, kind of just hear this nebulous term of like Akiya and Studio Ghibli and like Gate or whatever. And just like, you know, dream about it a bunch.
Well, international media kind of is at least partly, if not mainly, to blame. Like I, even myself, when I started dealing with them, which is about 10 years ago, and we don't do anything near the amount that you do, but I walked into this $1 million mansion above the Philosopher's Stone in central Kyoto, and the agent is like, so this became an Akiya about 8 months ago. This is an Akiya, really?
Yeah. And so that's... go ahead, Emil.
Like we have that in Tokyo too, right? The Akiya means like empty, and house is the kanji for it. So, but it has sort of two meanings. So the Akiya that when we go to show a property, once a tenant has vacated it, it's like there's two conditions: kyojutsu means it's currently tenanted, occupied. The other version of that, non-occupied, is Akiya, empty property. And that's also Akiya with the same empty house kanji.
Right.
But the term Akiya that I think the Western media, and that we talked about sort of these cheaper properties or these like, I think for me, the big definition is it's more like unmanaged, not just unoccupied, but unmanaged. So if I just move out of my house and then it's empty and I'm trying to sell it, the term is akia. Like the word, the current status is akia because it's empty housing. But that is different to the actual akia definition. When you talk about akia bank, what the government runs, it's more unmanaged.
Well, unattended to. Yeah.
I think this brings up a really good point that I'm just realizing now, maybe, is the Japanese version of the Japanese word akia is, surprise, very Japanese. And by that, I mean it's extremely contextual. And so if you point at a dilapidated dumpster fire and say, oh, that's an akia, then that'll translate like, oh, it's that akia, right? But if you point at the $1 million, you know, condo akia over there, it'd be like, oh, well, yeah, but there's also that akia. And so there's like not a very well established or like streamlined kind of public definition. And especially actually from an official documentation point of view as well, that definition doesn't really exist. I mean, the definition is there, but it's very nebulous and it can apply to a whole bunch of things. So it's not very precise. Which is weird because in the Anglosphere, it's gotten very precise, except it's wrong.
Definitely. I agree to that. There are some areas, that some regions, and say, like, to be classified in the Akia Bank, to go into the Akia Bank, it must meet some conditions. And one of them is, yeah, it's, you know, it's not managed. It's like just sort of left unattended. So weeds can overgrow it. There's not someone who's regularly taking care of it and making sure that it is in good condition, even though it's vacated, all right? Or there's no someone actively trying to sell it take care of it in that meantime. So there are some regions that do have that parity in it. And so that's the definition I go by. When I see akia as not a vacant property, I think the term akia is rather the unmanaged, unkept property that will just, if no one takes care of it, if it just stays as it is, it's going to sort of become dilapidated and overgrown.
Abandoned ware of houses.
Yes. So Matt specializes in that, the latter
one. The abandoned ware of houses, yeah.
Ziv, how about you, mate?
I am the catch-all. I'm the host of the Japan Real Estate Podcast, and we provide consulting, facilitation services, and referral services for anyone doing anything related to real estate in Japan. So we work with professionals like these three pint people over there or down there or wherever you're looking from. A whole host of hundreds of Japanese, more traditional Japanese real estate professionals that would not be as approachable as these fine folks normally. And we basically do one of two things. We either do everything on your behalf, which means that you just need to give us legal authority to act in Japan on your behalf, and then we'll be your single point of contact in English, and we'll make sure that everything is done for you, whether it's purchase, management, or sale. Or we can act as consultants, which means that we'll connect you with vetted professionals, again, like these fine people or other bilingual Japanese professionals, who will serve you for the logistics part of the work. And because a lot of them are not like Emil, for instance, who is holding your hand and giving you strategic advice from day one, we also provide consulting. So your typical Japanese real estate professional is 100% honest and by the book and transparent, and everything has a paper trail to the moon and back. And they, you will end up with a title deed in your hand and it will be legal, but they're not normally going to be strategic about it. So they're not going to help you prioritize, do due diligence, tell you what questions to ask, tell you what you might want to look out for in the official documentation. So we can join in as consultants and hold your hand and guide all of that process on your behalf as you work directly with the real estate professionals. And like Tracy, I do other things too. So I've got another company that helps people invest in other things in Japan. So set up their own business or purchase an existing business or partner with a Japanese business, as well as relocate to Japan. So a lot of M&A operations and a lot of relocation logistics support. and recently also an online retailer. Our website is up. We will be soon selling imported products in Japan to the Japanese crowd, so probably not as interesting for viewers of this podcast, unless you have a very interesting foreign product that you think might be of value to the Japanese market. We can definitely have a chat about that.
The Bank of Japan just raised interest rates.
Fun.
I think we hit
yes, 1.0%. Please
tell us more, 1.0. It's big in my world. I think awesome. Yeah, I don't think it does impact the industry overall. I'm interested.
1.0% for home loans.
Oh no, no. So the central bank, Bank of Japan, increased their
interbank okay.
rates. You know, it used to be sort of negative and then zero, and then over the past few months, it's been going up, 0.25, 0.5, 0.75, and then just was it yesterday? 1.0, so 25 basis points. It went up. So you'll expect home loans to increase as well over the maybe the next 3 months or so. Most banks.
What are they currently
pass that on? About 0.9 to 1.2. is what most of the variable rates and the fixed term rates are like about 2.5%.
Our US viewers are now like, what?
Yeah, it's strange because for me, you know, 0.6 used to be expensive.
Yeah.
You know, 0.25 used to be like expensive. So really like interest rates have doubled from my perspective. Anything like with a one, like an integer in front of it is like,
I'm sure that's what the headlines.
That's ridiculous. Would say. Yeah. It's ridiculous. But definitely it's strange. My loans in Australia, which it's like, oh, they're 5, 6, 7%. I only speak in the whole numbers. The decimal no longer matters. Yeah. Whereas in Japan, it's, you know, people are like, oh, it was 0.95. Now it's 1.15. Oh, maybe I should hold out. The amount of people holding out, waiting to see what like, you know, oh no, it's too high now is a bit strange, because they're still like, oh, in the UK I'll still, yeah, I'm buying something there instead.
I'm wondering, yeah, so. In your opinion, I know you're macroeconomics professor, I expect you to not commit to any opinion on that, but I know that the banks, like if you look at the Fed in the US normally, and there's a whole argument about it now, it should be an independent thing that's not related. But Japan's central bank tends to be a little bit more, influenced by government. Yeah. I'm wondering, do you think that actually has anything to do with Japan's economic situation overall? Or is that like a kind of gentle guidance from the government?
I can't answer that with any sort of authority or clarity or confidence. But I do know a lot of the inflationary pressure is from the war right now and resources and oil. That said, the comments were that they do think that resources, there's not much more risk now to the economy. They are confident they have secured enough resources in terms of oil to get through this next stage until hopefully the strait is opened and there's more flow of oil coming through. So it sounds like they're not really considering increasing it again soon. They're comfortable at where it's at, what the comments suggested or what I was reading yesterday. So what happens in the future? Don't know. I was talking to other people though that were thinking the yen may still go up. It's 160 now, 160 into the dollar, may go up to 170, 180, different opinions. Some people
I'm thinking more about the past than the future, nobody knows, but I'm thinking more about the past. Like they started raising rates a couple of years ago, and I didn't see that correspond with a huge, you know, GDP stabilizing or growing or anything of that sort. So I'm wondering what's behind it as a trend.
Yeah, it's trying to slow down inflation, but a lot of the inflation now isn't from domestic economic excitement. It's from external pressures, which are increasing the cost of imports
and stuff. Yeah,
and and largely from fuel and the low exchange, the low yen. So it's not like the economy is overheating and they're trying to slow it. Yeah, that's not the case at all.
It's supply chain issues, right?
Correct. Yeah. So they can't go too heavy on the increasing of rates, especially. And I've said it many times. There are so many companies in Japan, small mom and pop shops, SMEs, that rely on this low interest rate funding for regular operations of their business. So increasing the rates to double, is significantly impacts most of these small businesses, and the majority of companies in Japan are SMEs.
It's like 99%.
It's like 80 or 90%.
You mean those businesses that would never be able to afford the 30 million in capital that we're now asked to fork out?
Yen Loans are a sponsor of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. They're a non-bank lender offering financing to both residents and non-residents of Japan for purchases of condominiums, as well as equity release cash-out financing against properties that you already own in Japan, whether mortgaged or fully paid off. They cover all of Japan's major metro areas, Greater Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, Kobe, Nagoya, Fukuoka, and Sapporo, offering a full nationwide footprint for all of your condo purchase financing needs. No residency, incorporation, or Japanese bank account is required, and the application process is highly streamlined. They have legitimate backers, highly reputable, and I can personally vouch for their founder, Mark Drapkin. Yen Loans welcome your business. Reach out to them at yenloans.com and let them know that you heard about them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast to receive 50,000 yen off your loan application fee.
I'm wondering, go ahead, Tracy.
I was going to say, talking interest rates, like talking to my mum about interest rates, and she was like going, because she's a boomer, right? And she's like, oh, amateur, we survived 18, 19% for home loans. And they had multiple properties at the time. So they just said, amateurs, we dealt with that, like we got through it, and that's why all these boomers are like, that's why all these boomers, they're getting a lot of criticism for the wealth gap, and it's just like, dude, we did it super tough. And it's like, it's a really interesting conversation to have, being in the sandwich generation of, the Gen Zers who just like really the home loans and real estate are out of, just the pricing to get into it is beyond them.
The boomers went through some shit. I respect the, sorry, you shouldn't curse on the
podcast. For sure. Watch your language.
Yeah. It's like Emil, like our friend Gary V said, it's a generation that's never been punched in the face, right? Like, they have no idea. But I'm wondering if we are talking government policies. There's been talk really ever since the new government came in, and we've been feeling it in the market because people are hesitant to purchase. And there's been talk about implementing some cooling measures. I don't know that we need cooling measures except maybe Central Tokyo and Niseko, but there's been talk about implementing some cooling measures of somehow preventing or making it a bit more challenging or a bit more expensive for foreigners, non-resident foreigners, to buy property or at least some kinds of properties. I haven't seen anything concrete come in except the requirement to disclose the purchase itself.
Which is,
do you have
a great,
any thoughts on that?
That should totally be a thing. Let me actually, I or more a question than a thought. Going back to my conversations on Reddit about Akiya, as well as news stories, because it's kind of everywhere. I'm sure we've all heard somebody talk about like a headline or something that posits, oh, you can get a visa if you just buy property. But I've never actually heard of somebody who thought that was the case and bought it, but then didn't get it. Like, I kind of feel like that's a bit of an urban legend that people do that.
Hopefully their immigration lawyers explained that when they
that's what I'm saying. Like, why would you be so dumb to be like, I'm going to get that visa?
No, it's a legit assumption. A lot of countries in the world do provide that, right?
Right. I mean, a few.
I think the other thing that people are most surprised about is that they don't need a visa to buy anything here.
Like, yeah, that's the other end of that scale. Oh, I can buy
that. The two.
In a lot of countries, you have to sort of have a deal with someone who's who's a local, and then there's all sorts of problems about people being shafted in Thailand and, you know, by criminals. But here in Japan, you do not need a visa to buy anything, or, you know, any sort. You can just buy whatever you like. What you may not get financed,
The
but you
only country in
can buy.
Asia Pacific that allows that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, but it will not guarantee you a visa at the
Right,
end
but
of
yeah,
the day. So.
where that comes from, though, so I find a lot of time when people come and they have a certain view of real estate or immigration as well, it's from the perspective that they've got either from their home country or another country that they engage with, and they think, oh, well, there's a rule about this, so maybe it's the same in this country or that country. So the one about visa is there are countries that, you know, investing in real estate there gives you a visa, right? A certain amount. So that's where it comes from. And you need to say, well, actually in Japan, we don't have that. We don't have one where you can just buy real estate and then you get a visa for it. So it's not from nothing. It's there are some countries
No,
that allow that.
my question is that the rumors or comments or whatnot seem to suggest that there are a number of people who have made purchases with the assumption that they'll get a visa, and then post-purchase figure out, oh my God, there's no visa attached to this. I've never actually encountered or met anybody who knows, like, there's no word of mouth confirmation of
I'd
somebody who made a
assume
purchase.
they'd be pretty embarrassed to admit
Yeah,
it
right?
publicly that they were
I
that
mean,
dumb that they haven't checked it out.
I think people that I come across, I think they're realizing that, you know, starting up a business in what I do in Minpaku, isn't going to get you a visa either.
Oh,
And
beyond a certain extent of a business, like if you're from the get-go buying a hotel, it might.
that's a different story,
Right. Yeah, it's not.
but just doing a Minpaku business doesn't necessarily. You've got to have other things on your planned business activities to get your business management. I've got two clients who bought, have set up their companies, have got the business management visa, yeah, Minpaku is their only business, but they had to show other, you know, other plans as well. So,
This is what happens
or
when
at
you
least a
just Google
minimum, yeah.
research and don't consult.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the
You just
internet,
Google things.
yeah,
free
Please talk to
free
the
information
experts.
from the internet is worth everything you paid for it. So,
Well, I mean
Totally.
that is a very good point of if you're relying on Reddit, which sometimes can be a good source of
Yeah.
information, but other
No, I mean, if
times
you're
very
going to the
much
internet, at least
misleading.
go to a place like this, right? Like,
Like
go to
not
the Japan Real
Reddit.
Estate Podcast. No, like anywhere on the internet. Just go to
You
a place
don't
where
know us.
experts gather and speak. We do it for free a lot of the time. So.
Can I touch on actually the other points that the Matt sort of mentioned about foreign ownership and now and what ZB started the discussion on is, you know, can foreigners even own and there's going to be sort of tightening and restrictions on that or increasing in cost. So one, yes, foreigners can own without any restriction, having never even stepped in foot into Japan. You can
90% of
buy
our
and own
customers, yeah.
real estate. And it's completely legal. What they're talking about now about I don't think there's been lots of posts and like fear tactics about they're going to tighten up and foreigners can no longer own or something like that. That's not the case, and I don't think that's actually going to be the case at all. I don't think they can legally even implement it. However, what they're talking about now is when you as a when you purchase property and you register your name on the title, there's going to be a requirement that you also put your nationality, right? Which they don't have now.
Makes
And
sense.
the bigger reason for that isn't just foreigners are buying up
Sorry,
real
hang on.
estate.
I wanna push back on that because from day one, pretty much, we've been at it for 15 years. At least 1 or 2 years into the business, one more savvy foreigner-friendly shihoshoshi, judicial scrivener or property lawyer that we worked with, told us that, hey, you got to report to the Bank of Japan whenever a foreigner buys a property. They're not enforcing it, but legally you do have to do it. And a lot of the agents that we worked with were not aware of that. So we started doing that over 12, 13 years ago because, as far as we knew, that was the legal requirement all along. I think maybe just enforcement is now kicked in.
Yeah,
No, no, not,
self-reporting.
no. No, so not even that. It's what they want to do is on like right now there's no formal It's like when you, okay, what they changed a while ago was if you're non-resident, like these are on the actual title. So in Japan, you can go to the Ministry of Affairs and the Home Assure and pull up a title for any property in Japan. And it says the history of the property, everyone who's owned it, all the mortgage liens that have been on it, and the current owner.
Yep.
Now, what they imposed a little while ago was if you are non-resident, and regardless of nationality, even a Japanese who doesn't have a residency in Japan, needs to put a local contact, but that is optional. They
yeah,
can say
I'm talking about reporting to the Bank of Japan. Yeah. I'm talking about reporting to the Bank of Japan. Yeah.
So, well, I need to clarify because why would okay? Hold on, before I go into that, in the title now, in the title, they've actually put a added a new section where they put for non-residents who is the local resident contact.
Yep.
Right. There's so they've created a new line for that. And now what they want to do is create another line item for nationality.
Yep.
Right. What is a nationality? Because they want a formal record of who all the owners are. And the concern isn't about foreigners owning too much property in Tokyo and raising prices and things like that. That's not the reason for it. It's for foreign, if foreigners, a foreign entity starts buying up strategic land, either agricultural or around nuclear sites or other sort of military sites, it's for government security and national security reasons is really the bigger concern. People, I think, have been taking it as, oh, they're trying to stop me from buying locally or they want to impose a tax on foreigners. That's not actually the intent of it. And I don't even think it will be really possible to execute that because from what I've read, Japan, when they, just after the war, they entered free trade agreements. And many countries said, our real estate is not part of the free trade agreement, right? So we agreed for all these other stuff and we won't put impose tariffs, but real estate will protect, which is why countries can put restrictions on foreign ownership and taxation on foreigners buying real estate. Japan said, we're trying to recover post-war. So we're going to open up our real estate as well. We want money to come into the country and foreigners to come, like foreign investment to come in and help rebuild the country, which they did. So now to come back and say, actually, we're going to impose restrictions, they have to renegotiate the whole free trade agreement.
Yeah, that's
again, like, this is what I've read. So they can't, you can't just now, you have to renegotiate. So that's to be some give and take. You can't just impose it and everyone just accepts. All right, yeah, you just added a new tariff, essentially, to foreign ownership on one of your products.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah, so kind of the problem that I see with that, I agree with what you're saying, is there's like an original sin problem of when post-war Japan kicked off, the real estate aspect was kind of opened up because they, like you said, like, okay, money, come on in, foreigners, come on in, like, we've got to make this happen because we got nothing, right? And that, you know, economic miracle and all this stuff happened. And so those, like, protocols and whatnot are still in place, but the times have changed. And so you've got kind of this mismatch between what is, like, what is wanted from a governmental and, like, societal and political point of view versus what the, like, actual reality of the rules that exist are. And then there's the whole data side of things, which I could talk about, but that would take hours. So, yeah, it's a really funky kind of situation, I think, that Japan is in right now regarding that. Yeah.
Can I cut you all? Emil, I'm so happy. I think I'm about to educate you on something that you didn't know, which is so bloody rare. But please allow me to share this screen, because apparently you're not just you. I mean, again, 99% of the agent we've ever worked with were not aware of this. But here's the, where's the Reddit sharing screen? No, it's the Ministry of Finance. Is that good enough for you, Ministry of Finance? reporting requirement. Let me show when you can see your screen. And this is the updated English version. That's why it says 2026. But again, this law has been in place, as far as I'm aware, in the last 15 years or longer. A reporting requirement under the FEFDA for a non-resident acquire real estate property located in Japan. And that needs to be filled in and submitted to the Bank of Japan. And we've been doing that for the last 15 years. It didn't go in the Tohon until now, which is what they're discussing. It wasn't in the official registry, but the Ministry of Finance via the Bank of Japan needs to receive this form, which you fill in Japanese, which is why the agents and Chihoshoshis are doing it usually, if they do it, if they're aware of it. And because again, nobody enforced it. And that has been reported. What the Bank of Japan did with it, and whether that was something that anybody ever cared about or had access to or analyzed the data collected, I don't know. Again, it wasn't enforced. Most of the agents that we've worked with were not even aware that that was the case until we educated them on it. But this has been in place for ages and ages and ages. So the panic is unjustified, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. To clarify on that is not a foreigner thing. That is a residency-based thing.
Non-resident, correct, yes.
Yeah, non-resident. So that's the big difference, right? So a lot of my clients are resident, like they're resident here, and they're foreigners, and they're resident in Japan.
Yeah, you're not supposed to know about it. You're not even serving these people normally.
So they're not required to. So this is a different. And the big one for that is about like money laundering, right? Yeah. And where the funds are coming from, because they can't see it in Japan. It gets sent from overseas. The residents, but this discussion now about foreign requirements and like, even if you're a local resident, but if you're non-Japanese national, purchasing is what what this discussion is about. But I do think there is some fear mongering that the purpose is to implement a mechanism to restrict ownership or to increase taxes on foreign ownership, which I don't think that's the intent. But
I mean, it'd be silly with the price. I mean, I get it in places, again, that are overheated international hotspots like central Tokyo and you know, the slopes of Niseko or whatnot. But you do this as a blanket statement nationwide, you're gonna like land the killing blow on the entire dwindling rural real estate market, right?
Look, in Tokyo, some of the requirements that they're asking for is more about flipping, speculative flipping. People will buy it off the plan and then just sell it for 20-30% more a few months later. And they're asking now the local governments, local councils in Tokyo are saying, it's strange, they're requesting builders, so there's no punishment, they're requesting builders to request that their buyers don't resell within 5 years, is what the requirement is.
That's why they put the double capital gains in place, if you sell within 5 years, right?
Oh, no. That's old. That's existing. They didn't put that in place. This is new, saying, please don't flip within 5 years. Please don't even resell within 12 months or within 5 years. They don't want you to resell it. Of course, there are some conditions they can't help. You end up reselling. But they just it's just a request that the builder, the developer will say to the client, to the customer, please buy this, but please promise not to resell it. Like, you know, you know, flip it. It's for your own use. But there's no enforcement and there's no punishment. So people are still doing that. And until the government really take it seriously and say, look, you cannot, we'll tax you further if you do that or if you never live in it. And look, one of the mechanisms that allow people to really abuse this is you are allowed a 30 million yen capital gains tax waiver if it's your primary residence. So let's say I buy a place for 100 million yen and then I sell it for 150 million yen. So I made 50 million yen of capital gain. The first, like if it's not my primary residence, then I'm taxed on that 50 million yen of capital gain. But if it is my primary residence, the first 30 mil of that capital gain is not taxed.
Yep.
So what people are doing is they're buying a place and they're putting their residency there for until they sell it, maybe 3 or 6 months later. And they say, oh yeah, that was my primary residence. And they get that that waiver, right? So the first 30 mil is tax-free. And the government is now, I've heard reports of, if you say that, they'll actually want to say, well, show us your utility bill, show us your electricity, show us internet, and actually show us the receipts. Don't say you've connected electricity and then it's like 1,000 yen a month for 6 months. You need to have shown that you actually live there and that you've been there. There's something going on there. That you've genuinely moved there and then you have to sell for a reason.
So you're feeling optimistic about various hurdles that will be piled on foreign buyers.
I don't think there are going to be any hurdles piled on foreign buyers.
Yeah, I'm cautiously thinking the same thing, but cautiously, because they have done some stupid things, blanket statements, and the current environment seems to be very focused on garnering votes from people who are scared of foreigners. So it sounds like something that somebody who doesn't care about anything besides being elected again might put in place.
I think it's tough to implement certain mechanisms, and then and then in practice it's not foreigners that are increasing the price, it's like it's even Japanese people buying and flipping. So what I think is there's two things. One is the fear of like the foreign fear that has been pushed by the government, you know, again to get voters, and then in practice of what's driving up prices. And it's not foreigeners buying that are driving up prices. It's like, you know, foreigners are buying, but it is also the domestic market. But it's a lot of this speculative buying and flipping and reselling. So just by putting restrictions on foreigners, that's not going to reduce the price, because the foreign cash buyers that are buying still have money to buy. So it's going to be taxation efforts that impact even local residents, or even like Japanese nationals, not just foreign buyers. And then there are legal mechanisms in place that I think prevents, hey, let's just add taxes or restrict foreign ownership or add taxes to foreign owners.
Well, other countries have implemented stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's a free trade agreement that I think is limiting Japan's ability to do that. Whereas other countries can do that because it's not part of the free trade agreements. Is my understanding from what I've read.
I hope you're right. But I mean, they have been talking about voting to change the constitution about all sorts of things too. So I guess that's an option. And in the White House now, we do have somebody whose hobby is tearing up free trade agreements. So we'll see.
How and UFC.
That was a brilliant fight. It was a good fight. Oh my goodness. I rewatched the, this is the Ilya versus the Gaethje. Fight at the White House UFC fight. Just a slight tangent.
You want to think about novel uses of real estate?
If you have not watched that fight, even though I knew the winner, I knew the result, and it was 30, and I still watched it again. I downloaded it, and it was epic. I like, and you know what, what's going on? Did I hear the wrong thing about who won? And it was quite a roller coaster, but amazing.
By the way, as we wrap up and go on tangents, am I the only one here who's barely staying awake because of the World Cup, or is anybody else in the same boat?
The men's World Cup.
I'm sorry, the men's World Cup. Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm being a bit cheeky.
No, fair enough.
I'm just catching the glimpse on the news. So yeah. It's like, isn't that guy Messi like the GOAT? Like, isn't this his like a millionth World Cup and he's just still brilliant? So
Mbappe as of last night, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. I don't watch that, but I haven't been watching, but I will watch. I think Australia America is America is the host country, one of the host countries. So that versus Australia coming up, I think, is it tomorrow? Saturday, I believe. So that's going to be a big one for Aussies and
America. It's a host nation. How do you reckon they'll do?
They did really well against Australia. Did really well against Turkey. So it's and soccer's anyone's game. I think America is the stronger team, but Australia, hopefully they give a run for their money. But again, because it's the host nation, it's super interesting. It's a super special game, I think, for Australians because you're going up against the host nation. And Japan as well.
Japan tied up with the Netherlands. I thought they were going to disappear for a minute there, but they
The second half, the 89th minute sort of equalizer, and
Japan you is are a great watching place. See
Japan's a great place to be for the World Cup, because when Japan play, wow, the Japanese get behind it, and it is so much fun to be in this city, or in any city I think in Japan, when Japan's playing in the World Cup.
Go Japan. We're fingers crossed. All right. Thank you for your time today, folks. I hope we can get to do this a bit more regularly. We're only missing Blanca. So next time with Blanca, hopefully. Blanca.
Yeah. There's so much to talk about, like with especially the Minpaku regulations. It is happening everywhere right now. So
Our last conversation about that. You were warning people that it's getting stricter.
I'm trying to get ahead of it and distill it. But I think the rule of thumb is always, 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 it's all local. There's never one flat rule for any address anywhere in Japan. So that's still the case. And it's actually getting even more nuanced. So
With a visa, right? Don't assume that you know what you need to comply with.
Assume nothing. And so each one, you have to do your pro formas and your numbers. And but also maybe in the next one, I do want to talk about what Emil and I went to a really interesting conversation the other day about institutional money. But because we've been talking about individual owners, here right now in this one, but it would be good to talk about the institutional money and what's happening in the marketplace for that. And we can.
I'd be very interested in that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a really good session at the ANZ CCJ.
Is that domestic institutional or foreign institutional? Both.
It was discussed both, and it was just the trends. The international money. Like, I'll give you the short version. The international money is really limited to the Golden Triangle and all the places that are proven. And if you're looking for money for something that's not proven yet, there has been a bit more domestic appetite for that. But it's really hard to get international people to look at anything that's not proven already.
We're talking about for hotels for hotel and tourism type stays. So
the Golden Triangle being our next conversation.
Yeah, that sounds like a great conversation. Well, we've got the highlights, so we'll distill that information.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Thank you, and thank you everyone for joining. And do like and subscribe. It's all down there, and we'll see you all next time. Thank you.
Bye.
So there you have it. Yet another JREP session. Hope you enjoy the chat. We definitely enjoy getting together once in a while to record these conversations for your enjoyment. Let us know your thoughts in the comments section below. Now, we can't let you go without telling you about MailMate, our sponsors and business partners. They offer peace of mind for your property in Japan. They'll make sure that your taxes, your utility bills are all paid on time, liaise with your management company for you, or assist with your parcel delivery while you're out of town. Get in touch with them on mailmate.jp today and mention the Japan Real Estate Podcast for 10% off your first year. And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening. And we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd of course appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.